to do those basics that are so impactful over the long term, when you're already in your client's business, you're already like in the back end of their website, you're already helping them with content creation, like now you can just turn that up a notch, be a little bit more strategic about it, and help them get found on Google.
Hey there, I'm Emily Reagan, and you found The Marketing Freelancer. This is the podcast for marketing freelancers and service providers who are already making an impact behind the scenes and want to take their skills, income, and business to the next level. Here, we're all about embracing the unicorn title, a full-stack marketer who can do it all, strategy, implementation, creativity, and everything in between. We're the magic makers who know how to deliver real results for clients and are ready to rise as sought-after marketing specialists. We're building a business we're proud of, working with dream clients with impact, and charging rates that reflect our work's worth. Unicorns unite. Hey, today I have Laura Jawad here, an SEO specialist who helps female service providers and small businesses get found on the internet. Laura is here to talk about how you can get clients finding you through Google search with your own website. We're all about high authority websites and being known for your job title and your services. Hey, I'm Emily Reagan, and I train virtual assistants how to be highly paid, highly prized marketing assistants and beyond. If you are a marketing service provider, if you are managing podcasts, blogs, if you're building landing pages, building marketing funnels, what are you doing? Get inside our digital marketers work group. I'd love to refer you, especially to some of these higher up online business owners who are looking for reliable long-term help in their business. It is hard to find good quality marketers, and nobody wants to go to Upwork, and nobody wants to pay Upwork. So join the work group. It's $997 for the year or $697 for 6 months. You'll get listed in our freelancer directory. We'll share jobs inside our community. And we also continue to speak and talk marketing, what's working, what's not, how to deal with some of these clients all inside our community. Make sure you apply. The link's down there. So let's jump in. I am so excited to have my friend Laura here talking about how to help us as freelancers create high authority websites that bring us in clients. You are an SEO specialist and you really know your stuff. You've been in the work group teaching our community, and I'm just so grateful to have you on the podcast. Tell everyone hello and a little bit about you and how you started your business.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the invitation, Emily. I'm so happy to finally be here. So I'm an SEO strategist for female service providers and small business owners. I have a background in science and entrepreneurship. So I have had a very windy career path. To make a long story kind of short, I left academia in 2017 after I had my first child, and just finding a huge gap in the support and the services that I needed at that time. And I founded a pregnancy and postpartum personal training business and later a birth doula practice. And both of those businesses I grew with SEO. And as those businesses thrived, I had people coming to me for help with their websites and their SEO. And ultimately, I decided to turn that into a full-fledged business of its own. So that's what brings me here to this business, to this conversation today.
It's so funny. I've talked to a couple SEO people, and it's like they figured out how to do it for their business, and then it went wild. Why do you think? Because I know I can be out in public and just say magical words like SEO, and people also want to book me. Why is SEO so intimidating to the average business owner?
I think when people think about SEO, they think about, I mean, SEO is a huge topic, right? And especially now, SEO encompasses not only the technical foundations of your website, but it also encompasses the keywords and content. It encompasses the user experience. It encompasses your brand reputation off your website. So it is a huge topic. And I think that when people think of SEO, their mind first goes to the techie stuff, right? Rather than the stuff that's like easy for them to do or the stuff that truly is in their zone of genius, like the content, right? And all the pieces are important, but I think people get hyper fixated on the stuff that they can't do.
Yes.
Or that is like, that is quote unquote hard.
I think it's also fair that they see like, hey, this requires a specialist and a deeper knowledge. Like, let's get someone else to do it, which is just smart business, right? Like Pareto principle, like delegate the 80%. But for some reason, I always feel like I hear SEO the most, right? And it's so interesting to me because when I first started my marketing freelancer career, I kind of stumbled into it and I had fun. I had fun doing it. And I was telling you right before we hit record, if I could just go get lost in my blog rabbit hole and not talk to people some days or not have to do hair or makeup or speak or sell in my business, like that's fun for me. Probably the journalism background, but I'm thinking about in terms of like content and searchability and how people find you. And it was one of the first things I did when I started becoming the face of my business and nobody knew me. First thing I did was start a blog. I still haven't updated those old ones. They're really gross.
I think the old ones are so interesting. So, I mean, we were having this conversation before we hit record. And I think like you with your journalism background and me with my science background, like we could both just blog all day and be so happy.
But like not about our travel mommy adventures, like not that.
No. Like I love writing informational content, right? And I have had to, I'm going to get back to the old blog post in a second because I have something I want to say, but I have had to learn coming from an academic background how to write beyond informational content, like how to write stuff that's not purely encyclopedic, like how to bring in perspective and warmth and personality, because I love just doing research and like writing a book report. Like it feels so good, but it's not what people necessarily want to read. And, you know, information is a commodity at this point. So just like writing another informational post isn't going to cut it. And it's not going to get found for that reason. So, you know, it's this thing that I've had to kind of learn. What I am going to say about the old blog posts, though, because we do get better at what we do over time, right? And particularly when I look back at my first business at laurajawad.com, that's all still up. The first blog posts that I wrote, they're still up and I look at them and they're absolutely cringeworthy. And, you know, best SEO advice, like best practice would be to like update them or archive them, right? But I keep them up there because for me, it's fun to see that journey, right? And I think it's like nice for other people to be able to see that journey and see that like it didn't, like I think I write a pretty good blog posts these days, but I didn't start out that way, right? I had to learn how to do it and they've gotten better over time. And so it's a nice reminder for me, but I think it's also kind of nice for the people I mentor to just say, hey, like it doesn't have to start out perfect, but like practice will get you there.
And the consistency
off
in the long term. Makes me think of the Instagram profiles where if you scroll down, like you see old stuff and like the old style or whatever we did back in 2018 that was cool. And to me, that just shows maturity. And I, just like I don't want the brand new doctor out of med school, like I think that goes a long way in the online space. It's like the currency of like, hey, I've experienced these different trends and I'm here. And we also need to be smart about where we spend our time.
Yeah.
Fixing those and being OCD as much as I want to be. Some of those weren't even really, some of mine were, I don't want to call them like diary entries, but they were a little more personal. So
yeah,
the amount of SEO is going to fix them. So I just left some of them.
Yeah. And like, you know, again, just because we have people listening and it's an SEO podcast, best practice is to remove stuff that's not getting impressions, that's not getting found. All it does is serve to dilute the content that you do want to get found, right? It makes it harder to shine a spotlight on the stuff you do want found. So best practice is to update old content or remove underperforming content. You know, so if your site is struggling, that is a thing you should do. Now, if your site is cruising and you're happy with things, like my Laura Jawad site, I am happy with it, right? So it is not worth my time to go back and do that, but it's not the same advice that I would give to someone who is like actively trying to grow their blog or grow their website.
Awesome. Okay, well, there's two things I want to cover on this episode with you. And that is one, as service providers who want clients to land in our lap, to find us for the service we provide, like what can we do with our website? I also want to talk to you about your services and getting started in the SEO space. I do have a module inside the Unicorn Digital Marketing Assistant School that opens the door to SEO, but there's so much more to do beyond that. And I see a lot of work in this field. But I have one starting question. And I'm surprising you on this one. Sorry.
Oh, no. Okay, hit me.
How do we know if our SEO is actually working? Because you just said if your site's cruising, I was like, well, why don't we start right there?
Yeah, there's different ways to answer this question.
I believe it.
So one is purely analytics. Go to Google Search Console, go to Google Analytics, and look. Is your website getting traffic? Is that traffic coming from search terms that you care about? Right? Those are like pretty important things to know. Now, ultimately, we want to make money. So the other big KPI, you could say, is like, is your website making you money? So are you getting client inquiries off your website? When you ask people, how did you find me? Are people saying Google? Not every website visitor is going to book a call, subscribe, or purchase right away. We know that. But you should be getting some sort of conversion from your website traffic. And so you should see over time that you're getting more subscriptions, that you're getting more calls, that you're booking more clients who found you through your website.
Yeah. And I will say, when you do tracking links for anyone listening, you can follow through those Google events and you can see who buys the course or the program or signs up for the webinar. And I have always had a chunk that found me through Google because of the work and the foundation I have put in.
Yeah.
And bought.
Yeah.
And that's actually how my current CMO client, I don't have a large client list right now. I have three clients and one of them found me through Google for this specific service because not a lot of people do it who aren't on Upwork, you know? And so that's kind of the whole point of the conversation today is how can other people do that too? But yeah, sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say I still have my personal training business. It's a side hustle at this point, but I don't do anything to market it. I don't create new content for it. I don't do anything to market that business. All I do is serve the clients that I have, and I still get multiple client inquiries a week, and they are all coming from Google because that's the only place you can find me at this point. I don't even have an Instagram account for that business anymore.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And I could, like, with the volume of inquiries I'm still getting, I could run that business full time.
Yeah.
If I wanted to. So there's a clear indication there without even looking at my statistics that like my SEO is working.
So did you just say that we don't have to go dance on TikTok to find clients?
That is the long-term dream. So I kind of think of it, I mean, SEO is a long-term investment, right? And I love using a stock market analogy. And especially when you're getting started, SEO is like, it's like your investment portfolio, but social media might be your day job. Both are important for building your long-term wealth. So when you're just getting started and your SEO hasn't vested, you're going to have to get clients from somewhere. It could be social media. It could be referrals. It could be in-person networking. There's a lot of options. And you never are obligated to dance on TikTok. Okay, hear me. But in the short term, you're probably going to have to do something other than strictly SEO to fill your client roster. But over time, 100% if you do it well.
And I think a lot of us need to bring that back to our clients who do expect overnight results. I think that's very important that they understand. Oh, do you say like 9 months? I feel like I heard 9 months for SEO. What do you know for it to start working?
So in my experience, it really depends. It depends on a lot of things, right? It depends if we're talking about SEO on an existing website or a brand new website.
Okay.
It takes longer on a brand new website. It depends on the competitiveness of your industry. You know, it's much harder for me to get my SEO website ranking than it was to get my personal training website ranking, because obviously SEO is a competitive industry for SEO.
Yeah, just right. Look at virtual assistant, like all of the agencies and all of the overseas places, like it's really hard to even rank for that.
Yeah. So it depends on the industry, depends on how new your website is. It depends on how good your content is. right? So it depends on the work you're putting in as well. So it's variable. I would say don't expect much in less than 9 months. Like, I hear canonical advice like 3 to 6 months to see your SEO working. I think it's a little longer these days, unless you have an established website already. Oh, brand reputation is the other thing I'm going to say. If you already are starting out with a strong brand, like, that will help. But if you're starting out pretty fresh, I would say 9 months is like a pretty solid estimation.
Okay. I think that's like managing expectations here. We have published a couple blogs that were pretty niche and not competitive that started ranking page one right away. But that's very rare. That's rare for us.
Yeah. But for you, again, so I think you hit the nail on the head when you said niche terms. Niche terms always easier to rank for than more competitive terms. You already have an established website with domain authority behind it. You have a brand with a strong online reputation. And so all of those things mean that when you publish content, it's going to rank quickly relative to someone who has a newer website or a website they haven't invested time in SEOing yet.
So what you're saying is everyone listening who hasn't built their website yet or done the SEO, it's so much better to do that now. Get it started. Okay, so how is it even realistic for a marketing freelancer, digital service provider to rank on page one?
Yes, but the question is for what? Yeah. Okay, so let's start with somebody is ranking, right? Somebody's ranking for that term. Could it be you? Sure. It's going to be hard for something like really generic. So the places where you're going to have the most success are in the long tail, which means getting as specific as you can with your keyword, right? So you're not just a digital marketing assistant. You're a digital marketing assistant for whom?
Good.
And serve your local community first, because local is, it's far easier to get found in a local search than it is in a non-local search. Let's just say a non-local search, right? And so making yourself known in your community and targeting local keywords on your website is automatically going to make you easier to find. And yes, people in your community are looking for the service that you provide.
So would that look like, let's use a social media manager, for instance. So social media manager in Richmond, Virginia, or for law firms, I'm thinking, or realtors, I'm trying to think of some niches that we do. Is that what you mean when you talk about long tail?
Yeah. So yeah, sure. Social media manager for law firms. You know, we could go and look and see if there's search volume behind that, but I actually bet there is, because law firms, like, I mean, that's an industry that advertises, right?
They got money.
and they have money. So being as specific as you can in that regard, and then saying I am a social media manager serving Richmond, Virginia and beyond, and using those local keywords in your image file names, using those local keywords in some of your meta titles, on your contact page. And if you are truly seeing clients in your local community, then your Google Business profile.
Oh, yeah. We kind of forget about that when we're online.
Yeah. And if you're purely online, you should forget about it, honestly. But if you have in-person touch points, if you truly, like, if you're going to in-person networking events, if you're having coffee with clients in person, if you're serving people in person in your community, then you are eligible for a Google Business profile. And that provides an additional opportunity to get seen in search. Because when you do a local search, I'm sure you've all seen there's the map pack that comes up, right? Like, there's a map with three results underneath it. And then underneath that is the organic results. So it doubles your opportunities for exposure in the search results. However, they're very clear with their guidelines. It is for local businesses with in-person touch points. A lot of people get away with having one when they're not technically eligible one, but Google reserves the right to remove it. And so if it's something where you're really leaning on it, or that's where you're archiving all your reviews and it gets taken away one day, there's going to be a lot of tears. Right? But they warned you. So, but there's also, in my mind, no reason not to be serving your local community in person as well, like going to those local networking events, like having coffee with someone once in a while, all of those things bring a myriad of benefits even beyond SEO, right? Mm-hmm. So do those things and then create your Google business profile and let it work for you.
I love that. And that's kind of what we talk about too, especially in the work group, is getting out in the community, like low-hanging fruit, so much easier to find clients when you're getting started with your local network. Okay, so let's talk about the strategy or what a freelancer could do to start ranking for SEO. Like, where should they start if I haven't done anything yet with my website? And I think about the person who, all right, we niche down. I have a couple services that are somewhat related, but I might, you know, have never really stepped out yet with the SEO as part of my strategy.
Yep. So the first thing is looking at the words on your page, right? So listen to this conversation again and put some serious thought into, like, what is your long tail descriptive service description? Both what are you called and what do you do? And most importantly, how would your prospective clients be searching for someone like you? So how would your prospective client search for you in Google? Okay. And so it's not the time for like creative titles, like use something explicit or accurate, maybe I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So figure out what that is and then make sure you're using it on your homepage, on your about page, on your services page. The top thing that I see is that, like, when I audit websites, people do not say what they do, who they help, and how they help them on their websites in clear language. So, you know, I think we've all seen it, like the helping women thrive. Like, you land on a website and, like, above the fold, it just says, like, helping women thrive or empowering you to do something else expansive and abstract, right?
Taking marketing off your plate. And you're like, wait, what does
but
that
how,
really
mean? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But how? No one's Googling taking marketing off my plate. But, you know, people are Googling marketing assistant, right? Or digital marketing assistant, or they're searching for specific problems, right? So what are those things? And then make sure you're using them in your headlines, in your copy, in your SEO titles, in your meta descriptions, in your image file names, because that provides context to the search engines.
Yeah.
And to your searchers, right? Like, when people land on your website, it needs to be abundantly clear what you do.
So how would we know what people are searching if we don't have any kind of history with Google Search Console? We can't just go look at the queries. Like, how do we actually know?
So the first thing I always suggest is just start with your own head and, like, try to put yourself in the mind of a searcher. Like, if I was looking for my, because most of us, we're our ideal client at some point, right? And so how would I have searched for this service or this provider? So start there. And then second is voice of customer research. Go ask people. And even if you're brand new, go ask your friends and family who would be ideal clients, right? Like, how would you search for me? Or how would you describe me to someone? So voice of customer language, super, super valuable. And then if you are striking out or if you still need inspiration, then who are your competitors? And I don't say that in, like, a, you know, like, fist to fist kind of way, but, like, who else is doing this thing that you want to do and how are they describing themselves? So those are three places where you can go to get some inspiration around what you should be calling yourself and what words you should be using on your website. That's super important.
Our job title and our services, is like that best practice, or is it kind of, I know the answer is kind of like, it depends, but like, if you had to lean toward one or the other, where does those fit together?
They both have to be there.
Okay.
Right? Because some people, you want to appeal to people at all stages of awareness, mm-hmm. right? And so in order to target people who are researching their pain points, researching their problems, they don't know your solution exists yet, you have to use the words that describe their problem or the solution, you know, maybe the solution they're looking for, but maybe they don't know the provider, right? And then for people who are solution aware, you need to be using words that describe what the specific job that you do. So they both need to be there. Generally, all the words should be on your homepage. Your about page should skew towards the job title The services pages should skew towards the service. And honestly, when we're talking about that top of funnel and the like people researching their problems, that stuff goes on the blog generally. So everything goes on the homepage. Other pages have more specific uses. But I guess the short answer to your question is you do have to use all those words on your website.
This is going to cause a little bit of an existential crisis for some people listening that have to go all in with a job title. And maybe they're evolving and changing. Like, does that matter if like what I'm starting at isn't what I stay? When I'm thinking about people who first start and call themselves a marketing assistant, but then they end up being like, okay, I'm a content manager or a podcast manager. Like, how do we accommodate that shift, that evolution?
You just change it,
that's
right?
That's what I wanted.
Yeah, you just change it.
No,
but what
deal.
I would say then is if you are creating a lot of content for your website, and I hope you are, you might need to adjust that content as well, because I'll get like a little bit in the weeds here for a second.
Okay.
Google looks at your website and it evaluates it for a site focus. What is your website about? And then when it's evaluating your content, it's looking at something called a site radius. Like, how far does this content skew from that site focus?
Oh.
Right? And it's looking for like a pretty tight package, which is why your blog should be a business blog and not a journal, right? Because it should all come back. It should support that site focus. But as an example, like when I started my website, I was just a personal trainer. Then I became a personal trainer and a birth doula. Then I went back to just being a personal trainer. When I opened up my birth doula practice, I put more content on my blog around topics that would be relevant to people who are preparing to have a baby or who might be researching a doula. Because otherwise, I'm putting this new title on my website, but I have no authority around it, no expertise around it, right? And so then why should Google send anyone to my website for this? These types of queries. So if you do change your title dramatically, you need to update your content to relate back to that.
Yeah, you need the content to back it up, to back up the claim. Like, you need it to support the job title.
Yeah.
No, that totally makes sense. And I think about, that's easy for anyone listening when you provide that service already and you know what you're doing. And then you can go, does the blog just like help us go deeper into more keyword opportunities? Is that like really what it is? Just supporting us and like more chances to rank?
So it does three things. Yes, absolutely. It provides keyword opportunities. Every blog post you write is a backdoor into your website.
Because it's different, right? The keywords are different for every subsequent page that you create. They're not all the same as the homepage or the services page.
Yes. But the other thing that it does is it helps establish your topical authority. So Google's not going to refer people to your website for things that you're not an expert in. And it's judging experts by their topical authority. And so you have to build out content around the thing you want to be known as an expert in. And so even if you're not ranking for particular blog posts, like it's going to be harder to rank, for example, maybe for a pillar blog post about a more general concept, right? But there's still utility in that blog post because it still helps establish your topical authority. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The third thing a blog does for you, besides keyword opportunities, establishing your topical authority, it also sets up.
Hey, wait a second. Let's take a pause. Here's the truth. Clients don't rave about the VA who's always scrambling through Google Docs. They rave about the one who shows up sharp, remembers everything, gets stuff done, and makes their life easier. That's exactly what the Smart Client Brain helps you do. Keep all your notes and recordings in one place so you look like the pro they brag about and pay well. Steal it for free at emilyreaganpr.com/brain. Back to the show.
Like a journey for your visitors. So it helps increase user engagement. It gives you someplace to guide people. It sets people up for a good content binge, which, again, good for SEO. User engagement signals are a direct SEO signal, but they're also just helpful for keeping people on your site longer, consuming more of your content, building that trust over time, right?
Clicking through to the next.
Yeah. Week. Someone who goes on a binge of your content is far more likely to remember you and come back to you than someone who just like drops in on a single page and then jets.
Think about some of my Pinterest clients in the past. You know, I built my business really helping the designers and the painters on Pinterest. And it would be interesting because, you know, Pinterest is keyword, right? It's just keyword research and
another search engine. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but people, like the bounce rate was really interesting. Like how many people come to the blog and stay, because obviously the content had to match. And then what did they click through to, or did they? And like, that's really like the engagement signals you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep people on our page longer then?
Write really good content.
Okay, write good content.
So hopefully that's an obvious one.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're writing titles that are true to the content you're creating. Like this is where clickbait titles really hurt, because if someone clicks to your page and doesn't get what they're expecting, they're going to click right back to the search results and look for something to answer their question. Yeah. So you need to actually answer the question that you set yourself up for.
Okay. So I have one of my Pinterest clients, like she'll do these massive blogs. I'm just going to paint a picture here for anyone like listening here. Massive blog on how to paint a painted dresser, right? With chalk paint. Mm-hmm. Then inside there will be little sub lessons. And so what I have learned is if I pull out a pen and say, how to silver leaf, metal leaf, painted furniture, but it's only a small portion of the blog, that's when people click away. Because like I presented the pen as something else. There's only so much I can do, Laura. I wish she would pull that out into all these little mini blogs, because like they would kill it. But like that's what's happening. And I think that's what you're talking about. Like it's not answering the question that original person searched, and it was taking too long to find the answer.
Does she have a table of contents on her blogs?
No, and she also moved the entire website to Wix, and I don't really want to talk about that.
So that's another thing that can help. It might not solve that problem entirely, but when you include a table of contents on your blog and you write really good subheadlines within your blog post, then it becomes really clear when someone lands on your blog post, they can jump to the part that's most relevant to them. Because let's be real, like, especially if you write a long blog post, most people are not reading the whole thing.
So
they're either going to skim like the first 50%, or they're going to jump to the part that they're actually interested in. And so let's just acknowledge that and make it easy so that they're getting what they need out of our content instead of just clicking away from it.
Yeah. And it's kind of heartbreaking when someone puts so much effort into blogging, but there's still more to optimize within it.
Mm-hmm. What if it's heartbreaking? Like, it's like the hard work's been done. If you've created a long piece of content, like, you've done the hard work. So optimizing it takes a little bit of time, but I don't know. To me, creating it is like the big hurdle. And then you have this thing that you have forever and you can always go back and optimize it.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking about how much was lost in the website transfer. Like, honestly, like things are missing. And I'm just in the Pinterest lane right now.
Yeah.
But I see the clicks that we're getting. I was like, okay, this should be doing better. Well, thank you. I'm going to bring that table of contents idea to them, because there's like such goodness in our blogs. But okay, I want to tie this back into the freelancer then, when it comes to like our blogging strategy and where that fits in, or like what we should even write about.
Yeah. You asked me a question in a Voxer this week that I thought was so smart.
How did I word it?
I think you asked me, what are three cornerstone blog posts every freelancer should have on their blog?
Yeah. And it's daunting to think about writing something every week, but if we could just think of like those core articles and start there, I think that would like get the juices flowing.
Yeah, I really liked that question. And so I put some thought into that. And here's what I would say. So obviously, I want you to build out a beautiful, robust knowledge base for yourself. But if we're just getting started with three blog posts, answer a top of funnel question. So what is something your audience is asking before they know that you're the solution to their problem?
Yeah, give us an example.
So from my personal training business, right? Like, what's the best kind of strength training after a C-section? Like, 90% of people doing that search don't even know that postpartum personal training is a thing, right?
Right.
But we could bring that into your space too. Like, what are people asking before they know they need a digital marketing assistant? Like, how do I delegate tasks? Is that something someone would be searching? Or like, how do I...
I don't know. That's a good question. I think about the person saying, how do I get help with this?
Yeah.
Like, they want to do better marketing. Like, they know... I don't know.
This is where a voice of customer research is really important, but it's also someplace where ChatGPT might be really helpful.
Okay.
You know, providing information about your business and then saying, hey, like, what are questions that my audience would be asking before they know I'm the solution? It's pretty good at this kind of thing.
Okay. So, and it might not be like, how do I hand off my social, but do you think it would be as early as, this sounds so stupid saying it out loud, but like, how do I do better with social, or how do I get clients from social? Is that too early?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it is, because you're capturing someone who needs help with their social media.
And you get to shine with that.
Yeah. And if that's the specific like aspect of digital marketing that you are best equipped to help with, then that's a great top of funnel example.
Okay. Yeah. It's so broad, but think of someone's niche into ManyChat, or like, I think about Janelle, who's like booking clients just from our podcast interview because she does active campaign. And it's like those services, like, how do I set things up? An active campaign is getting her clients right now.
Yes. She does a beautiful job of this. Mm-hmm. She's a fabulous example. So you should have a top of funnel. You should have a middle of funnel. And that is for folks who are solution aware. So they know that a digital marketing assistant, they know a virtual assistant is a job that exists, and they're considering it. They're researching it. So like VA versus marketing assistant, which mm-hmm. is the right choice for me? Or 10 tasks you can hand off to your marketing assistant.
Yes, right? Some of those blogs. Or what is a social media assistant?
Yeah.
You know, like some of those.
Yeah. So these are for people who... they've researched their problem, they've identified a solution, and they're researching that solution more deeply. And so they can be comparison posts. They can be, you know, if you're a service provider who offers some sort of sessions, it could be like, what happens during your first blank session? Things that are going to provide more information to people researching your service. And then the last one I'm going to recommend is a perspective-driven piece or a case study. So either something to start showing off your portfolio, or something to say, to talk about your journey. So like for me, it could be something like how I filled my one-on-one client roster without using social media. That could be a blog post, right? But think about something that is not purely informational, that provides your perspective or your firsthand experience.
Okay, so I have to bring it back to the social media manager. And it makes me think, and tell me if I'm on the right path, but I'm trying to connect the dots here. So if I'm a social media manager, is it kind of a little bit of like what I stand for and what I don't? So on social, I think about the people who just money drop and brag and do like the results posts. And maybe it could be something like why I don't do these type of close. This is like terrible social. This is terrible SEO title right now, but why I don't write these kind of posts for my clients? Like, is it like an opinion piece like that? Did that even make sense?
It did make sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
It could,
yes. So
I think about like
that example I actually think could be a good one, because then you can use it as an opportunity to talk about like what you do stand for. And you can also drop some value in terms of like what makes a good post.
Yeah.
I think like a strictly what I stand for, what I don't kind of thing is like more appropriate for an about page.
As long as
you can use it to tie into something that also has a value add, right? Because you want to talk about your experience or a case study or something in a way that shows off your experience, but also provides like a teachable moment for the person reading it. Because like people don't really want to read just about you.
No.
Right? There has to be something in it for them. And so like, how do you bring that back to a teachable moment?
And I think that will really stand out from what, you know, ChatGPT can push out or any of the AI writers is like robotic, formulaic, you know.
Yeah.
sound like everyone else, but when you add your perspective in, I think that's really the key here. It ties into what we were talking about earlier, right? When you were first start writing, but I think that's really what's going to make people stand out as thought leaders.
Yeah. And, you know, this could be a whole conversation in and of itself, Emily, but like no matter what piece of content you're writing, it needs to highlight experience, expertise, authority, and trustworthiness. Those are signals that Google values and are using to separate human created, human first content from AI junk. So whether it's an explicit like perspective piece or case study or not, like you should still be looking for ways to bring in your experience and expertise into any piece of content that you're writing, even if it's like in the introduction and you know, it's like in my experience, like I see this or what I've learned from, you know, 10 years as a digital marketing assistant, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You always want to tie in your experience, your expertise, your stories, however you can. But having some of those perspective-based pieces is also helpful from the perspective of establishing trust and creating connection with what's essentially cold traffic, right?
People. I love it. I love this. This is going to get everyone to flex their muscles. And I think the case study is a no-brainer. Like as soon as you have that, the testimonials and the numbers and the stats.
I left it as two options, right? Like the case study or the perspective-led piece, because like you're going to have people listening to this who are like, well, shit, I don't have a case study yet. That's okay. Like your own transformation can be the case study.
Or doing it for your business.
Talking about your business, your transformation. That's okay. If you don't have a client case study yet, that's okay. But something led you to do what you're doing. Talk about that.
Okay. I'm thinking about the marketing assistant who we all do this, like I should be on all these other platforms. Like, is it important to be on other platforms doing SEO? I feel like that's the trending thing right now on TikTok. Like the 20-year-olds are like, put in your SEO rich captions. But will that benefit us to do that? Like have optimized platforms as well?
Yes. So I don't know shit about TikTok. I'm just going to put that out there. I've never even logged into it. It is important from a number of perspectives. So Google now shows TikTok in its results. It shows LinkedIn posts in its results. I believe it's starting to show Instagram posts in its results.
I've seen Pinterest. Yeah.
So your social media content can show up in Google. So it does provide another layer of search opportunity. The thing I am more interested in as a website SEO expert is that Google increasingly rewards websites and brands for their offsite credibility, for the work that they do off of their platform. And so it's very hard to win at search right now if you don't have presence on other platforms, right? And like, that kind of sucks, but that's where we're at. And so it doesn't mean that you need to be an influencer. It doesn't mean that you need to be posting daily, but you should have a presence somewhere else besides your website. And so like pick two places. For me, it's Instagram and LinkedIn. And again, I am not there posting daily. I go in waves. Like it is hard for me. But I also do a lot of this. This is a type of platform, right? Because this is me showing up around the internet, talking about the things that I know a lot about. You know, I'm leveraging your platform, but this is still another platform. So yes, it's important to be on other platforms. SEO, specifically on other platforms, I guess it's a thing. I definitely can't speak to SEO on other platforms with like any level of expertise or authority, but at least showing up there will support your website SEO. And so I wouldn't like get like too excited. Like if your main goal is like your website presence, I wouldn't get like too excited about optimizing your Instagram SEO. Just show up.
Yeah. No, I think that's what we need to hear. And also we don't have to do it all. Like pick one or
two. You can't because I'm imagining that your freelancers are working with no team or a very small fractional team. Like you can't be everywhere.
No. And we need to be very strategic about when we do. So I think if you can bring that level of SEO to other platforms when you do post, I think it can only help.
Yeah.
Okay. The other big question I had for you too is like how ChatGPT is affecting SEO right now. Cause I even find myself, Laura, going there first instead of Google.
Yeah. So it's definitely impacting things. And I think that it's just very trendy right now in terms of like news cycle. So the reality is that Google still owns about 90% of the search market share. ChatGPT and Gemini have the largest percentage of the LLM search market share, and that's increasing over time, but it's still like only about 10%, right? So people are still going to Google to search for stuff. And then the other interesting thing is that like when you dig into the statistics about like who's using ChatGPT for search, it varies by industry and it varies by demographic.
Oh.
So ChatGPT is taking a larger chunk out of search in the finance sector, right? So a lot of people go to ChatGPT for finance searches. And then I saw a really interesting breakdown the other day of age demographics and gender demographics. And overwhelmingly, men use ChatGPT for search more than women do. And women only dominate men in terms of the search volume. Like, I think it's in like the under 25, like 18 to 25 bracket and the over 55 bracket. The thing that I got from that is that as someone who is not in the finance space and is targeting female entrepreneurs who tend to be, I'm going to say between like 30 and 50, Google's still pretty darn important. So ChatGPT is impacting things. It will impact things more over time. But if we get distracted and we just turn all our attention there, you're missing out on all these people who are still going to Google for their searches. Mm-hmm. And when you look at like what matters, like what does it take to show up in ChatGPT search? Clarity, like really clear data. Really consistent language across platforms because it's an LLM, right? It's a language prediction tool. So consistent messaging, consistent language, brand reputation, prioritizes websites that are backed by a strong brand reputation. You have to do these things for SEO anyway.
Yeah.
And it's the same if you start to like look at AI overviews, right? They all sort of prioritize slightly different things. But also they're just, those things are still just part of like good content creation practice or like good SEO practice. So I don't think we have to get that excited yet.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean,
We shouldn't ignore it. But we also shouldn't stop what we're doing.
Yeah. And it's still crawling our websites and we still need to publish content. And we still
You still have to have like a fast, mm-hmm. easily crawlable website if you want an LLM to index your stuff, right? And AI overviews, if we just want to talk about AI search in general, like they're still in the traditional search ecosystem, right? Like they are essentially an LLM layered on top of traditional search. So all these things that you're doing, like optimizing for speed, optimizing for crawlability, using schema, I think schema are becoming more important when it comes to AI. Creating clear, structured data, like on-page structured data. These things mattered for traditional search and they matter even more for AI-powered search. We're just doing more of what we were doing.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's really, sometimes you see some headlines, I can tell they're clickbaity or people are just trying to newsjack and stay timely.
I mean, like 100%, like AI overviews are reducing click rates. ChatGPT is taking a little bit of search volume. But people are still searching. And I think the jury is still out as to whether or not the clicks that it's taking are money-making clicks.
Yeah.
So I would look at your bottom line before getting too excited about anything.
I'm curious with the service providers, because I've come up in ChatGPT searches for service providing, probably for marketing manager level help. And I hear about this from other people too. I'm curious how ChatGPT knows the top service providers and how it's like gathering that information, because you can go in there and say, like, you know, who's the best freelance or fractional CMO? And it will give you a list of names. How can we get our names in there? Do you have any idea how that works right now?
I don't have like a super clear answer for you there. I know that
it's happening.
Yes, it is happening. Brand reputation.
Yeah.
Brand reputation. Brand reputation. I would just like really lean into your trust signals, proximity signals, relevance signals. Mm-hmm. And at this point, hope for the best. Because ultimately, like, ChatGPT is not ranking and indexing websites like Google does, right? Like, it's training on a large data set and it's creating answers that are based on like statistics. It's like LLMs can't even do math. I was listening to a podcast yesterday and it was really interesting thinking about people who try to do math tasks within LLMs. But LLMs aren't like calculating things. They're still using like predictive language models to answer the questions. So, you know, they work fundamentally differently than Google does. So how exactly they're ranking, I don't want to misspeak, but yeah. I'm positive that those like the contextual relevance signals, like the trust signals, the proximity signals, like those things are still going to matter.
Yeah. And then hence why we're even doing this episode. I think it'll get the ball rolling for a lot of people to start doing that for themselves. It's so easy when we're the freelancer, you know, we're behind the scenes. We kind of forget about our own business. And I think this is an easy way to start and to find your voice. And that perspective piece, I think, is very challenging and such a good idea for someone to go out there and figure out like where they stand and how they can articulate that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a personal question.
Okay.
Why do you love SEO?
You know, I ask myself that all the time because it's like, do I really care about SEO? Like, I mean, fundamentally, no. But what I love, I think, is helping people organize their information and helping people stand out as an authority. Like, I think that part is really, really fun because I work with a lot of businesses who, like, the service providers do amazing things. Like, truly, they are the boots on the ground. They are the authority. They're their subject matter authority. But their website doesn't reflect it. Their content doesn't reflect it. Google doesn't recognize it. And so that's a fun problem for me. Like, how do we get you known for the thing that you're an expert in? And I don't think you can do it without SEO, right? Because like so much of your reputation, like we talked about this a little before you started recording, like you are who Google says you are. Right. And your website like needs to be the first thing that comes up in search when someone looks for you or the thing that you do, because it's the only place where you get to control people's perception of you completely.
And this opens the door to PR. You know, and the next level of visibility.
Yeah. And that's a whole other conversation. You can't do SEO without PR anymore. Like SEO like loves PR, and you know, truly SEO ties the bow on like all of your marketing activities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you cannot do SEO without PR. You cannot do SEO without copywriting. And so it's a little bit of everything, right? It's super fun. You can't do SEO in a vacuum. Once upon a time, you could. Like once upon a time, a website could be a full funnel marketing channel, and it isn't anymore. So we have to reset our expectations about like what a website is and what a website's for and what SEO is and what SEO is for. But it's still really, really valuable. Our websites still matter. Our search presence still matters. It's just shifting, like how it matters is shifting.
Gosh, I love that. So what does your business look like now and your SEO services and packages?
Yeah. So I am offering one-on-one support. So I offer SEO site review and strategy packages, and that is like a juiced up SEO audit. So that's me taking the time to dig really deep into your website performance, your traditional SEO metrics, your online visibility, and look at what's working, because you want to know what's working so you don't break it. Find the opportunities and then prioritize those for you so that you can take action on it. So that's one level. That's me putting that together, handing it off for you to do on your own, implement on your own. I offer SEO coaching, which starts with the SEO site review and strategy package and pairs it with 6 months of implementation and accountability support. So yeah, so you get your strategy plan and then we work together for 6 months as you implement it so that when you have questions, if you need help setting goals, like we do that together. And then I do done for you SEO on WordPress websites. So again, everything starts with the SEO site review and strategy plan, but then I implement all of the techie bits that you don't want to do.
I like that you said for WordPress sites.
Yeah. Right now I'm a WordPress gal. Maybe someday I'll branch out, but my heart is firmly with WordPress these days.
Love it. Mine too. So what advice do you have for somebody who wants to specialize in SEO? Because I know this comes up a lot. I mean, I should have gathered the stats. Maybe I'll read it in the outro of how many SEO requests we get in the work group, because we've had over 3,000 jobs. But where can we go to feel good about starting this service? Like, what do you suggest?
So the first thing that I would suggest is SEO your own website.
Good.
Right? Because it's going to give you practice. It's going to give you fluency. And if you do a good job, then it is like the seed for your portfolio, right? Like it becomes your business card. So start with your own website, read and listen to everything you can. But I also recommend taking a course. Like if you want to offer this as a service to other people, take a course, because a course will help you not only learn in a structured way, it will help you fill gaps and tie concepts together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're also then making sure you're learning from someone you trust as opposed to picking and choosing from a myriad of sources that may or may not be credible.
Yeah.
I mean, the internet's a scary place, right?
I liked your little eyebrow raise when you did that.
So start on your own website, take a course. You know, as you start to offer it as a service, like decide what your scope is. Be really clear about what your scope is. Develop a good network so you can refer out for the activities that you don't want to do. And make sure you're setting really clear expectations with your clients, not only for what your scope of work is, but also for things like how long SEO takes to work and what they can realistically expect from SEO.
Yeah. Because all those questions will come up on that sales call and you got to be able to confidently answer them and set those expectations at the beginning.
Yeah. And then, you know, you just have to start at some point, right? Because you get better by doing. And so it's like any skill that you're already, that you already have, or any service you're already offering, like you're better at it now than you used to be. You got better because you did it over and over again. So at some point you just have to start.
I think SEO is just sticky, to tie it back at the beginning, because it feels like there's always more to do. There's that whole super technical side that we're talking about and the content side. But I agree. I love that you said that. Just start. Because usually we're further along than our clients. I can tell you, I don't know one client or business peer who has been happy with their SEO agency. Like they want to work with a human like you.
Agencies are terrible, Emily. Like I have like the horror stories that I've gotten. Even if you are less experienced, I think just because you care, you're going to do a better job.
I needed to hear that. Thank you. And then we have a blog post that you put together. So if you are thinking about starting in these services, check that out. We have a link there. You have a really good SEO Kickstarter for us. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'm sharing the SEO Kickstart Kit with your audience. And this is a collection of 5 SEO checklists that are going to help you set up your website to attract more of the clients you want on autopilot. Please feel free to use this to optimize your own website, but this is also a fabulous tool if you are getting started with SEO and you need a tool to help organize your work on client websites. So you can check that out at laurajawadmarketing.com/marketing-freelancer.
I know you've taught inside the work group and you've helped us with the keywords that we choose in businesses and for our clients. Do you have any other like training that we can take from you?
So right now, I'm in the process of putting together several mini courses. And
yeah,
so hopefully by the time this airs, those will be available. Available now, I do have what I call the Rank Ready SEO blog template that will help you with the nuts and bolts of putting together an SEO blog post. So that is already available. I'm putting together an SEO training for service providers who want to offer SEO as an add-on to their existing offer suites. And I sure hope by the time this airs that that is available on my website as well.
I encourage everyone to go follow Laura. And if this is something you're interested in, when you announce it, we'll be ready and waiting. And I'll make sure I share with my group too, because I know
awesome.
There's...
I appreciate you.
Yeah, like I get people started in UDMA school. I teach them a little bit about the Yoast plugin and some quick tools. But eventually, if they want to have the confidence to offer this as a skill specialized and charge bigger packages and do what you're doing, they're going to need a course. They're going to need to learn from somebody and not just...
And honestly, the reason I'm putting this together, Emily, is because people like your people, your unicorns, are so perfectly poised to effectively offer SEO to their clients. People do not want to pay for an extra service.
Mm-hmm.
And SEO is a long-term strategy. And so your people who are already in their clients' businesses, right? They're already being paid. And they're there for that long term. They're the ones who are just perfectly poised to offer this as an add-on to their existing offer.
Yeah.
They're already there. They're already doing all the other marketing tasks.
Yeah.
Right. And remember what I said earlier, like this is the bow you tie on all your marketing activities. It makes so much sense for your unicorns to be offering this as a service.
And I think about the agencies who charge a couple hundred dollars a month and then don't do anything and then tell their clients they're optimizing and they're just like...
I literally don't know what they're doing.
Oh my God. But like, think about you as a marketing assistant.
Yeah.
If you do the same, but actually do the work and actually get results and you're already doing it, it's like the copywriters who don't write for SEO or the landing page designers who don't touch it. Like my goal is that we're very deep in the marketing ecosystem and we understand how it relates and we can just... add that in, but then we feel confident when we're charging more. We're not
the $20 and this is my goal. My goal is to reach all of those people. Like I want website designers to create websites that are SEO optimized and not just say they are, because that's the other thing too, is that it's like so cool to say like I offer an SEO optimized website, but then like, do you? No. Learn how to optimize for SEO if you're going to sell that, right? And same thing for copywriting. Like service providers do not want to pay for an extra service.
Nope.
And they're surprised when they find out that their website or their copy isn't optimized because they kind of assume it is. And in my mind, it's a no-brainer. Like, if you're going to create a website, why wouldn't you create a website that's findable? So that's my goal with this course that I'm putting together, is to make it really easy, like not to teach you to be like an SEO expert, right? Again, define your scope, but to do those basics that are so impactful over the long term, when you're already in your client's business, you're already like in the back end of their website, you're already helping them with content creation. Like now you can just turn that up a notch, be a little bit more strategic about it and help them get found on Google.
I mean, this is my love language here. Like I want our unicorns to be the best, to never fall short, but also charge for it and feel confident charging for it. And like, I don't know if I told you the story, but when I was working with my big client, we brought someone on the team to help the blogging. It was very basic. And she presented like a marketer and we brought her on the team and she didn't know a dang thing about SEO. And that was like one of her number one responsibilities was that weekly blog. And I just sat there and I thought, like, what are we doing? Why are we paying her? And then why should I teach her? Like, this doesn't feel fair because I've put in time and like learned on my own. And I just couldn't believe there are people out there who presented as a marketer and didn't know that. I mean, maybe not be the best at it, but like didn't know how fundamental it is. Like you said, naming your image files. This is really judgy, but
SEO today is different than it was last year, and it's certainly different than it was 5 years ago. And so if you learned like a little bit about SEO 5 years ago, like your knowledge is very out of date. So again, if you're saying that you're offering an SEO optimized website, or you're writing SEO optimized blog posts, or telling a client that you can optimize their website for SEO, like you had best be up to date with your knowledge or it is not going to work. SEO has changed.
I've made clients cry when I had to point things out that they thought they paid for and they didn't get. I'm like, this isn't like that at all. And I feel really bad. But that day and age where you could get away with that is over. Mm-hmm. We're in our own trust recession with the people we bring on our team. We're seeing teams slim down and we do need to offer more. It doesn't mean we do more for cheap or less, but we have to bring that level of quality. So I'm so glad we had this conversation. And more importantly, for freelancers to freaking do it for themselves so they can be found. So those clients like book them from a Google search. Like, that's my dream, that they don't even need me. Book your own clients. Okay. Thanks, Laura. We'll catch you over on Instagram. All your links are in the show notes. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Emily.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of The Marketing Freelancer. Stay tuned, hit subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Thanks for tuning in to The Marketing Freelancer. If you're ready to connect with other marketing freelancers, learn advanced strategies, and take your business to the next level, check out our Digital Marketers Workgroup. It's my exclusive membership where you'll find the support, community, and tools to land premium clients and grow your income. Visit marketersworkgroup.com to learn more, or just use the link in the show notes. Apply today. Step into your power, own your expertise, and command the rates your work deserves. See you next time on The Marketing Freelancer. Unicorns unite.
Okay, I'm going to let my unicorn get that later. I started to type it and I'm like, no.
I can.
Yeah. Okay, so I was going to say one other thing. And oh my God, I'm forgetting my question here. Sorry, it just like popped out of my head.